Hello out there in the world. Welcome to my brand new podcast, Ramblin' Reviews. One of just a couple of different podcasts I'm planning to start here in 2021. I'm Ryan Caron. I am your creative genius, author, graphic designer, and filmmaker. And joining me today and every week on Ramblin' Reviews is website guru Tom Grimes. How are you doing, Tom?
Pretty good. And I guess I'll be on here until we get sick of each other and you throw me off.
Are we ever going to get sick of each other though?
I don't know. You moved a state away and we're still talking.
Right. Just so everybody knows real quick, what the Ramblin' Reviews is going to be all about is just me and Tom talking about movies, television, and whatever else comes into our pretty little heads. So this week we decided, you know what, might as well take a look back at 2020 and see what kind of crap came out.
And there was a lot of it.
There was a lot of it. And what came through as shining stars to the movies that came out both in theaters and on streaming. For me, I usually see, what is it, like about 120 or so movies in theaters last few years. That's what I've been doing. Of course, this year, because of COVID, because of the shutdowns, whatever, I only got to see 54 movies in the theater overall this year, 39 of which were actually in theaters. And I picked up streaming starting in about August. So I saw about 15 movies on streaming this year on Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus. So I'm not sure, how many movies did you see?
Probably 25 or so, I would think, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood.
And most of those,
a lot of the time to get caught up on TV shows. Right? Yeah, throughout the whole year. Yeah, it's pretty sad. Very weak year.
Including Wonder Woman. You did see Wonder Woman, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
A little bit of a letdown.
HBO Max. I got to see that one in the theaters.
It was okay, but kind of a letdown. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it may have been a letdown for a lot of people because of the streaming, because it was on such a small screen. You know, seeing it on the big screen might have been more, brought more power to it, because there was a lot of big action set pieces in that one, just like any other comic book movie.
Exactly.
So right now, I guess we'll get started talking about movies. I'll let you go first. So what was the first movie on your top five list?
Well, like I said, it was a horrible year for movies. Seemed like Hollywood was rehashing a lot of old stuff or getting desperate to release stuff just to get it out of the can, so they wouldn't have to wait for 2021 when COVID ends.
Right, or they were saving everything.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
2021.
Yeah,
so 2021. If theaters,
theaters. So this should be a great year for movies as soon as they let us back into theaters.
Right. Well, even with Warner Brothers going, you know, doing all their stuff on HBO Max, they're still going to release everything at the very least. So.
Exactly. I'd have to go with, let's go with The Invisible Man, the umpteenth remake of The Invisible Man. I really liked their take on it this time around. It was definitely exciting, you know, having the house out in the middle of nowhere, basically, that she's, you know, a little bit nervous because this guy supposedly has killed himself. And here he is, you know, somebody's breaking into her house and causing problems, and it just escalates from there. You know, I really like the way the intensity and some of the almost Hitchcockian photography leading into some of the scenes was done. I felt they did a really good job, unlike some of the previous remakes, which were a little bit weak.
Right.
So that's number five for me.
Cut you off there for a second, really quick. I just want to let everybody know that we may be talking spoilers throughout this episode. So please, if you have not seen any movies or you don't want to hear any spoilers, you might want to just leave us now. But most of these movies have been out for a while, so you should already know what happened.
Yeah, so if you don't know Darth Vader's Luke's father, hang up now.
Sorry, we spoiled it.
His name is Grogu. I just always enjoyed Elizabeth Moss, and I usually enjoy her in most movies, so.
Right. And I think Lee Whannell is coming out to be a pretty good director. He's always been a pretty good writer from what he's done in the past. But seeing him direct this one, yeah, he did a lot of really good techniques as far as hiding the invisible man. There's a lot of moments in here where he'll sit on a moment for a while, and a lot of horror filmmakers, when they do some similar tactics, you know, they'll sit on a thing for a while and then move the camera and then shift back and then have the jump scare. Lee Whannell didn't do that a lot in this movie. He would pan the camera over and then pan back to his other spot and then pan the camera, and nothing would happen. But it added to the suspense of everything.
Yeah. Seeing some of the objects in the room being moved, you know, like you would notice they were in a different place. It's like, wait a minute, that wasn't there. Right. So, kind of cool, you know, how he did that.
Right.
Yeah. You know, let you know that there was something going on.
A great sense of suspense in the movie. Yep. Throughout.
That's what it's all about with, you know, these horror and thriller movies. Yep. You know, let's not have, you know, Godzilla step on Bambi right away, you know, let's build it up.
Right, exactly. The other thing I really liked about this version of it is that it focused on the victim as opposed to the invisible man himself, which is what all the other umpteen movies do. They focus on the actual invisible man and what he's going through, but here it's about the person he's going after instead of him. Like, so it adds again another layer to that suspense.
Some of the original ones, when they would show him wrapping his face and unwrapping his face, you know, this one didn't even go there, you know.
It was right.
Definitely, you know, more like you're saying, through the victim's eyes and building the suspense more, you know, which is a lot more fun for us, the audience.
Right. And, you know, when the jump scares did come out, like when she's in the attic and she drops the paint on his face.
Yeah.
They were earned. They weren't just contrived or pushed in there to try and get you to jump out of your seat. These were actually earned jump scares. That one, and in the scene where they're in the restaurant and her sister gets knifed. I won't go further than that. I mean, that came out of nowhere, you know? It was just like,
just like, whoa. Nice
calm scene. And it's like, whoa, what happened?
They did not just do that.
Exactly. So it's a lot of those types of sequences that combined together just created a really good atmosphere and some really good acting. Like you said, Elizabeth Moss was great. But it was definitely one of the better ones for sure.
And even the buildup, you know, to, you know, the whole movie where she's trying to get away from him because he's so abusive and everything, you know, while he was still alive, you know, before he supposedly killed himself, you know. That was just crazy.
Oh, yeah. That first 10 minutes is extraordinary.
Yeah. So, I thought we were going to be watching a new version of the Jennifer Lopez one, Enough. You know, I thought that's what we were going to be heading. But, no, it went different directions.
Right. It's time to go back to Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So
what was your number five?
Number five for me was a little sort of a surreal type movie called Emma. I think it's been done before. I can't recall if that's correct or not. But it was a Jane Austen, and it's an adaptation. But the movie for me, it had just enough surrealness to it to keep my interest. And I know you didn't see this one, but the story itself just kind of, it was fun, and it just kind of flowed really nicely. And the actors, Anya Taylor-Joy is Emma, and she does a really good job, like she always does. I mean, I thought she was great in The Queen's Gambit on Netflix.
Yeah.
Didn't get to see New Mutants.
Oh, I watched that last night. So quite make the list, but it was good.
But, you know, she does a really good job. And, of course, you know, Bill Nighy is also in this. And he's one of those characters that's just so bland and so dry, but stands out in a way that helps the other actors play off of him really nicely. So for that, you know, just the way that the ensemble works together really brings the story out and it helps it move along at a quick pace. So that's why Emma landed in my top five at number five.
Very good. Yeah, I'm reading the write up on it. Sounds pretty intriguing. You know, another take on a Jane Austen, you know, story. Yeah. So very cool. Yeah, some of the settings in the 1800s I've always got a kick out of. You know, me being, you know, kind of a twisted mind, I always enjoyed like, you know, any sort of comedy or comedic take on a supposedly serious situation like Pride, Prejudice and zombies. You know, that was another one that I got a kick out of back in the day. So, okay, so number four,
sir.
Let's go with The Turning.
The Turn.
That was, you know, another take on The Turn of the Screw. You know, this sort of movie's been done before, but I really liked how they built the suspense on this one. They did a really good job, you know, because you weren't really sure who was alive and who was dead. You know, almost like Shyamalan's The Sixth Sense, where you kind of suspected, and then as the movie went on, you really started to believe that, yeah, he's just seeing dead people, you know, which is now a trope of a saying, you know. So, but this movie was really twisted, you know. So, you know, the little girl right from the beginning, I knew there was just something not right with her and how she was interacting with the governor or governess and all the people that worked for the estate of their dead parents. So yeah. It was just really messed up movie. And then, you know, just the whole scene with the creature, shall we say, in the lake by the house, that was just really wild.
Yeah, for a minute there, I was like, wait, I know I saw The Turning. What was that movie?
Yep.
That's
not real familiar with the actress, Mackenzie Davis, but felt Mackenzie she, you know, did a really fine job.
Yeah, she was good.
Those little kids, especially the girl, they're going to have good careers if they keep it up.
Yeah. And Finn Wolfhard was in that one.
Yep.
And I wasn't too sure about his performance in this one. You know, he's okay, you know, in Stranger Things and everything. But the older he gets, I'm just not sure yet as far as his talent goes in whether or not he can improve. He may be one of those child actors that kind of disappears after a while.
A lot of them do.
What'll do it probably is when we finally get to see the new Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, yeah, because that hasn't been done enough.
Right.
But I mean, Hollywood, give us something new. There's plenty of books that need to be made into a movie. I can think of, let's see, Threads.
I think what kept me from really liking this one was the end. The last act, it just didn't seem, it just fell a little flat, I think.
And yeah, it did, maybe because it was a little bit like we're used to.
Yeah it was a little bit of a almost like, I want to say cop out, but I don't know if that's the right term for it. They just kind of like start going in one direction and then just kind of forget about it and just end it. Yeah. Just because,
well, it's almost like they were trying to throw us a red herring and then they said, no, here's what's really going on. And just
right.
Kind of there. Yeah. It was kind of sudden, but yeah. But I felt the rest of the movie saved it for me to, you know, give it at least a four spot. So,
right. Okay.
I didn't have a lot to choose from this year. So, because otherwise it probably wouldn't have made the top. So for you,
my number four is probably going to amaze people, including yourself. And they're probably going to think I'm crazy and stupid and insane. But my number four is Fantasy Island.
I fell asleep in Fantasy Island, so sorry. I'll have to go back and watch it.
Hey,
if a movie puts me to sleep, then I usually don't put it on my list.
That would go on your top five worst list.
Well, it wasn't that bad, but, you know, it's just I fell asleep, so what can I say? Yeah.
I think it's just because I'm a sucker for those types of kind of corny, kind of weird, kind of stupid, but knowingly stupid.
Yeah.
If they do it correctly. And I think they did in the best way they could. And I don't know. I was just really hooked in what was going on. The end doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The reveal and what was actually happening was a really good idea. And the way they kind of brought you into it, I felt was a good transition. But when you look back on it, it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense compared to what they did in the actual movie. When you look at character developments and character motives, they don't quite match up. But I think the overall feel of the movie was enough, like you with the turning, to save it for me and to really rise it above just your ordinary bad movie. Again, it's probably the one pick that people are going to chew me out for. But hey, it's my list, right? I'm guessing that if I got to see another 50 movies like I normally would, that wouldn't have been in my top movies, because there would have been enough movies out there that would have been way better than that one.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, normally for me, what decides if a movie is, you know, going to be in my top five is, would I go watch that again? You know?
Right.
So that one I'm kind of like, if I have a moment, I might sit down and try to get through the rest of it. You know, kind of like a few other movies I can think of that I fell asleep during. that one, yeah. Might
be and I like the callback at the very end, which most people didn't, but I thought it was a fun little twist. So okay. Sue me.
I'll have to look for it. So we'll see if I
my number three was actually The Invisible Man. So we'll go ahead and skip over that and go to your number three. Yeah, we already
went through it. So very cool. For me, number three, let's go with Hillbilly Elegy.
Okay.
I mean, that was definitely a very different movie. Almost like a autobiographical documentary style in a way. And my dad's whole side of the family from, you know, the Tennessee, Missouri area, I swear, is like watching them in a mirror there. You know, a lot of the stuff going on there, people that had an opportunity to rise above and get out of the trap, but they got sucked right back into it due to family concerns and just not being able to say no to them. So I really felt for the family. I've seen many of my relatives with these kind of problems. So it felt very real to me and very poignant and touching.
Very good. I didn't get a chance.
Adams, you know, what can I say? You know, she usually does a very good job.
Yeah, I like all the actors in there. I didn't get a chance to see it yet.
And Glenn Close is the mom. She's something else.
Amy Adams is brilliant in everything. So mm-hmm. I didn't feel a connection to it watching the trailers for whatever reason. So that's kind of why I haven't. I've been kind of avoiding it almost.
Well, if you don't have hillbilly background in your family, you probably won't get it. You know? I mean, seriously, you know, you had to have seen, you know, that element, you know, and how just they keep falling into that same quagmire and getting trapped in that circle of, you know, whatever messed life they have. So, Right. Yeah.
So what's your number two?
This is where it got tough, because I really enjoy both of these movies. I'm going to go with Freaky for number two.
Nice.
Yeah,
Freaky.
Vince Vaughn is just awesome. I mean, he pulled off playing his feminine side, just, you know, like a dynamo. And the girl having to play a serial killer all of a sudden when she's this rah-rah Buffy, you know, type of character. I mean, wow. That was just something else. So I really enjoyed the real twist on Freaky Friday. You know, it's about time they did something a little tongue in cheek there to make that more fun than it ever was, because they've remade that one several times too.
Yeah. I don't know for me, and forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but Vince Vaughn did a much better job as a woman than Rob Schneider did.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought that was fun. I think Freaky is kind of on that same level as Fantasy Island in the way that, you know, going in, you just say this is going to be awful because of the premise and because of how it works out. But when you sit down and you watch it, it's just like, all right, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. I don't know. My wife kind of had that when I was talking about it and showing her the trailer, but then I reminded her, hey, we both thought Happy Death Day was going to be stupid, right, but we loved it. Both of us did. You know, we were shouting at the screen and everything. Awesome. It was by the same people. So,
right.
They got a good record with me now. So,
right. Yeah. Happy Death Day was one of those surprises that I didn't think that movie was going to, I thought it was just going to be an average serial killer
movie, you know,
Groundhog Day rehash, you know, all this good stuff. Then yeah, when you actually saw it, it was like, wow, that was pretty good. Yeah. Happy Death Day to You was good.
I enjoyed it. I got such a kick out of that.
the way they did it, like, you know, it was like right after the first one and how they kind of go back over things that already happened and try to figure something new out. And it was the twists and the way that they contorted everything was really good.
Yeah, it reminded me of the early days of computer gaming, where you would have, you know, character and you don't get all these lives that the video games have nowadays. You know, you die and you have to restart the whole game from the beginning. And that's what that reminded me of, was playing Zork and Enchanter and a few of those other earlier games where you had to write down what you were doing and learn your lessons so that you wouldn't go, you know, into that room or that path.
Right.
So a lot of fun.
And I think with both of them, the Happy Death Day and Freaky, it's because of the cast. Because the cast jumped right into it and just took it all in and just, you know, had fun with their roles and just made it happen, that, you know, that drew you in. You know, without Vince Vaughn, you know, it may not have been the same movie.
No, it definitely would have been different with anybody else. I can think of a few that might have pulled it off, but, you know, he was well cast for that role.
Yeah. So my number two wound up, it was supposed to come out on Thanksgiving but decided to come out on Disney Plus, and that was Soul, one of Pixar's two offerings this year. Not sure if you got a chance to catch that one or not.
No, that one I have not.
But this one, you know, harkens back to the, if you like the Ratatouille and some of the a couple of the other more adult leaning Pixar films, then you probably really like Soul, because this one, based on the trailers and everything, and this is like what Pixar is. Pixar does this a lot. You know, you go and you see the trailer and you go, that looks okay. But then you see the movie and it just blows you away. You know, based on the trailers, you know, Soul was about, you know, right away, you know, it's about a guy that dies at the very beginning of the movie.
Wow.
So right there, it's like, okay, this is a kid's movie. Nice. and they don't really go into what the actual story is about, which is about this guy trying to find basically what amounts to the meaning of life and what life is meant to be for you as a person and for, you know, your family and all this stuff. And it's got some, you know, I don't necessarily care for jazz that much, but this had some really good music in it that relates to the jazz and it connects the jazz to the real world and gives you that sense of wonder through the music and through what these characters go through to basically what it is they find their spark. Mm. Spark actually means. So it's a little bit sad because I believe that this Soul is the first movie that Pixar has released that doesn't have John Ratzenberger as a voice cast. So it's sort of the end of an era in that regard.
Yeah, he's awesome.
It was always fun to try to locate John Ratzenberger in each movie. because he knew he was going to pop up somewhere. So when he didn't show up in Seoul, I was a little bit disappointed, but you know, it was, you know, with or without him, you know, it's definitely one to go see, whether it be on Disney Plus or if it finds its way into a theater at some point. All right, and sir. We're at the number one spot.
For me, I'm always a sucker for movies about animals. I mean, whether it be Homeward Bound and, you know, or A Dog's Purpose. I mean, you know, I'll be there sitting next to my wife watching those and, you know, bawling just like she is. But in the case of this one, I just love the different take on an old Disney movie with the voice of Kate Winslet as the horse, telling it biographically. And that would be Black Beauty. I just really love the way this, the whole story played out. You know, the young girl come to live with her uncle after her parents were, you know, killed in an accident, and the way her and her uncle eventually bonded because of the horse and other interactions. And then, you know, all the trials that they had to go through trying to, you know, save horses in general, because this was like a rescue facility similar to a STAT over down the street from where I live, you know, so it's always interesting to see people that actually care about saving animals. And I mean, I can't say enough about, you know, how I just, you know, loved the whole premise of the movie and how they handled it.
Very good. Yeah, I was surprised. The Black Beauty actually did make my top 10. Didn't make my top 5, but it is in my top 10 movies for the year. I wasn't sure if I was going to like it or not. But yeah, within the first 10 minutes, you know, you just by all the cinematography with the...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's beautiful landscape.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. And just the young girl that plays in the movie. I can't remember what her name
is. Mackenzie Foy, I think her name is.
Mackenzie Foy, yes. Mm-hmm. I've seen her in a few other things. Joe. She did a really good job. And I love the way that the filmmakers were able to capture such emotion in the horse.
All of its friends and everything, you know.
Yeah.
How they ended up.
You know, when they... You know, it's just another testament to why you need to use real animals.
Yeah, which is why All the Wild didn't make my top 5. Exactly. Yeah. I liked the movies and the storyline, and Harrison Ford did a pretty decent job, but using a fake dog, yeah, just killed it for me.
Right. You know, I get it. You know, if you have to use CG for the fight sequence between the dog and the wolf the husky.
Yeah.
You know, and just really, you know, there's a fight sequence in there where, you know, the main dog becomes the alpha dog at that point. But, you know, so using CG for that kind of thing, great. You know, whatever it is, but when you're using CG for the entire movie,
yeah, giving it human eyes and expressions, it's like, right. Yeah, you know, the novelty store Spencer's Gifts for that,
right? And when you know, and when you say, well, they can't use the animals that way because then they'll get hurt or they'll do this, then you just got to point these people back to, you know, like the movie you said, Homeward Bound, where these animals got into some really big scrapes in that movie. And they were all real. They didn't use any CG in that movie. So,
yep.
So it can be done.
Trainers and handlers. Yeah. Sometimes you got to hire the best. So.
Right. But yeah, no, that's a good pick for sure.
And so, before we move on to your number one, because it is your show, just a few honorable mentions.
Okay.
Just because I had a short list, you know, but. They were decent, but not enough to really put them in a top 5 or 10 category. And I'll just start with the corniest one first, Hubie Halloween. I mean, I just laughed almost from one end to the other of the movie. It was just a horribly done movie, but it was still fun, you know, and it was just silly. Just watched The War with Grandpa yesterday or day before. And, you know, De Niro is always, you know, fun. You know, he's just a brilliant guy, you know, typical family story. So it was fun. Honest Thief with Liam Neeson, you know, he's, you know, done similar movies before, so it just made it honorable, but it was pretty well done, and it's fairly predictable, which is why I didn't put it any higher than a mention. But the Babysitter Killer Queen almost made my top five just because I loved the original one and they didn't let me down with the second one. So that was my honorables. So now, Mr. Brian, what is your number one? We all want to know.
Two of those were streaming originals, right? They were mm-hmm. Netflix.
Yep.
Hubie Halloween and the last one, the Babysitter. The other two, Honest Thief, I did see in theaters. And yeah, I agree with you. It was a little predictable, but Liam Neeson came for the show.
Yep. Definitely does a good job.
And then, yeah, I didn't see any of the other ones that you did yet, anyway. So my number one is actually the other Pixar offering this year, and that was Onward. And the reason that Onward got top billing over Soul is because of the emotional punch it had at the end. I don't know if you saw that one.
No.
And that one came out in March, right before theaters closed down officially across the nation. You can find it on Disney Plus now, but this is one of those typical Pixar movies that's all about family, that's all about, you know, searching for that, you know, closure, that finality. And so, and having, you know, it's a road trip movie with these two brothers that head out with half of their dad to find a jewel to finish because they, you know, they do a magical process where they were going to bring their dad back for 24 hours so that they could say goodbye and everything. But the spell gets all malfunctioned and only half of them comes back because they need to find another stone to finish the process. So it's a road trip movie about them finding this stone. But, you know, seeing these brothers together and really seeing them grow together and kind of become brothers for the first time, you know, since their father died. And then getting that, you know, it leads up to a really big emotional ending that Pixar does quite often, similar to the first 10 minutes of Up in a way. It's like taking that first 10 minutes of Up and expanding it to an hour and a half. But, you know, so that when you get to the end, you feel for the characters and it's just like what you said about Black Beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. Dog's Purpose, Homeward Bound. Yeah.
It's that same feeling, you know, you just, because of how they do it, not because of what happens and where they take you, is what really gets you with the tear ducts in that one. Soul, I didn't think had that same emotional punch at the end to really pull it through. And that's why Onward gets that top billing above Soul.
All right. Yeah, I believe my son recommended that I see Onward, so I'll have to get to that.
Yeah, if you've got a son, you'll probably get hit pretty good.
I have two of them, so yeah.
There you go.
Okay, so are we going to move on to the bottom? Just the ones we absolutely despise?
Yes, let me just run down the rest of my top 10. So
very good.
Of the top, so those were my top five. I'll just repeat them again. Emma, Fantasy Island, The Invisible Man, Soul, and Onward. And finishing out the top 10 was Wonder Woman 1984. I Still Believe, which you had mentioned to me a little while ago, that you saw. Nice Christian movie in there. Black Beauty, The Hunt, and Tenet. I'm surprised Tenet made the top 10, but based on all the other movies that were out there, it kind of squeaked in because it you know, it definitely went and made top 10 if all the movies that came out, because it did end up being a little bit drier than I was hoping from a Christopher Nolan movie, but it still had enough wild stuff in it to really push it up and keep my interest. So, all right. Yeah. So the worst five worst movies. You want to just run down your list and then we'll.
Yeah. I'd say Underwater, because it was just so predictable. It's been done before. I mean, The Abyss and a few other, you know, older, almost sci-fi style movies. This one just did nothing for me. I mean, even my wife was yelling at the screen, "Why are you doing that, you idiot? Why are you not just going and getting the hell out of there?" Right. And it just floored us.
Kristen Stewart's vague, non-existent facial expressions.
Yeah,
matters.
Yeah. And then the remake live action version of a Disney movie that I actually liked, the Disney cartoon animated version. You know, it was any of my top ones, but it was still pretty good. But they just, you know, it was terrible because they were trying to do the Crouching Tiger, you know, action scenes, and it was Mulan. And it's just like, no, this just doesn't work. You know, I'm sorry. I just couldn't buy into it. And plus the fact it's like, she looks so feminine. It's like, I'm sorry. How's anybody buying that's a guy? Come on.
We're going back and watching just one of the guys. That's the kind of or Hilary Swank. The movie she did played a guy. You know, those characters, you know, you could buy that they were guys, but I agree with you. Yeah. I liked it more than you did, but
soft and feminine looking. Yeah.
I could tell you there was no way she was hiding the fact that she was a woman.
No, I mean, what was it? I don't know if you've seen it. Hell on Wheels, you know, the one Asian girl that was portrayed as, you know, the son of the guy, so he wouldn't get wouldn't get thrown
down.
She did a really good job of hiding herself, you know, dirtied her face so she looked more like a boy, but this one, not even close. I tell you. Then after that, Sonic the Hedgehog, just I don't know. I was never a big fan of the video game either. I thought it was just so corny, and it was just not a very good movie in my opinion. And then the absolute worst, Vampires versus the Bronx. It's like, I mean, come on. You know, it was bad enough when they had Jason take Manhattan. That one was really bad too, but he didn't have anything going for this one, really. I mean, oh, the gentrification of New York, and then we're going to have vampires attack, and oh, give me a break. You know, it was just awful. Storyline was just all over the place and didn't hold me, you know, enraptured at all. I mean, I've seen plenty of horror movies, and this one just wasn't doing it. You know, if you want to see a good vampire movie, then, you know, you're going to go see Van Helsing or, you know, something along those lines where they have a lot more effects to it and a lot more background story that they're holding true to, and, you know, the whole mythos of the vampire. And, you know, you don't want them to sparkle or anything like that, you know, but still, it's just stupid.
What
I'd like to see them do, if they're going to get desperate for vampire movies, well, look up Brian Lumley and see if he wants to sell his book series so they can, you know, do the origin of where vampires came from. You know, that was an awesome series of books in like an alternate universe and showing how they came over here and started the whole mythos of the vampire. That was really well done.
So you're saying it was more vampire in Brooklyn than it was Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, but really badly done, yeah. Very much a B movie in my mind. So,
all right. So, my list of the five worst movies include Artemis Fowl, which is also straight to Disney Plus. It had some good actors in there, including Colin Farrell. But I mean, it was just everything they did was just arbitrary to everything else they wanted to do. You know, in the way that, you know, they just forced characters together for no reason. They created some weird things for the characters to do. Missions that they were put on, they started and then ended within 5 minutes. And it just felt so rushed and just all over the place. Like, and apparently, I haven't read any of the books, but apparently the character of Artemis Fowl was completely changed for the movie. From what I've read, it was just like, I guess he's supposed to be this awesome thief and whatnot, but they made him out to be just another kid that just gets thrown into an adventure, and it just didn't feel right. And his relationship with the main elf in the movie just didn't click. The two actors just never really came together to really, you know, form a bond that was needed for the movie. So you didn't see that one, right?
No. My daughter-in-law is really into those books, so I'll have to ask her if she's seen it and watch her face. Because her and my son are both big Harry Potter fans, and they saw all the movies, have all the books, you know, anything that comes out related to it. But she also likes similar things like Artemis Fowl, so yeah.
So next was a movie that was a Chinese import called Vanguard with Jackie Chan. And this was just outright horrible. It was a mess from beginning to end. I mean, there were almost every single transition was a fade to black and fade in to the next scene. And, you know, Jackie Chan, of course, you know, did his thing, you know, his usual antics and stuff. But even then, you know, he's going on, you know, upper 50s, mid 60s now. And so even he's getting a little slow, and it showed in the film. And it just, and the whole plot was just not worthy of anything, I guess.
Did they do his usual sequence while the credits are running, they show all the outtakes and him getting injured, because he does all of his own stunts usually, and usually breaks a bone in every movie?
Right. They showed a few of them, but not very many. They kind of held back on that too. So I'm guessing there probably wasn't very many good ones anyway.
Because I used to stick around for the credits because of that, because it, you know, his outtakes were hilarious usually.
Yeah, they usually are. But yeah, this time it was just, even that was lackluster. Next up was a movie called The Photograph, which right now I'm having a hard time remembering what that movie was actually about.
That's funny.
Which shows you how bad it was. But from my vague recollection of the film, nobody clicked in the movie. Like, everyone was just there going through the motions, and there wasn't any real emotion between any of the characters, you know.
It's supposed to be a love story.
It's supposed to be
a series of intertwined love stories. Oh boy.
But it failed. And just knowing that, because I can't remember hardly anything about the film, shows you why it made the list. Next was a little film that also had a bunch of animals in it called Doolittle.
I saw that.
You did.
Yes, I did. Didn't know what to do with that one.
Right. I mean, that movie, I mean, just up to the end with the dragon, that just solidified it. Worst movie, one of the worst movies of the year. when you've got your climax being a flatulent dragon, there's something wrong with your movie.
Having your storytelling, yeah.
I don't know why Robert Downey Jr. agreed to do this, but for whatever the reason was, he should get his money back.
or give his salary back.
Give his salary back. There you go. But again, this was filled with CGI animals that just didn't work. You know, the voice cast was all right, but it felt like everybody was on a completely different page from everyone else. And it was just, Antonio Banderas ends up being the funniest thing in your movie, and he's on the screen for 5 minutes. I'll take Eddie Murphy's Dr. Doolittle over this one.
Even though that one wasn't all that great either.
Right. But at least they used real animals for most of the film in that one.
True.
And then we come to my actual number one worst movie of 2020, and that was Gretel and Hansel.
I saw that one as well.
And now a lot of people might say that I'm mad on this one too, that this one and Fantasy Island should have been switched, because I saw a lot of reviews that were really positive for this movie, but I just did not feel it at all.
No, it drugged. The whole movie just drugged. Yes.
it was like walking through the river of sadness. What is it?
Pretty much.
Yeah. And I don't know. It was just so bland, and the cinematography, you know, most people would say it was really good, but I just found it dry and just, it just weighed you down, really.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I just did not connect to anything in this movie.
I'm sure the ones that are reviewing it positively are probably going to say something like, oh, well, it's this, you know, whole thing about, you know, getting the kids to get over her parents and, you know, or their parents and, you know, and their horrible life. But yeah, it just didn't get there. It didn't explain well. And it just drug. It's like, you know, there's movies where you just want to like go out and take arsenic, you know, just to not have to watch the rest of it because it was just dragging. So, yeah.
Right. I don't think it's that long of a movie, but it felt like it was super long.
It was entirely too long. If it was an hour and a half, it was an hour and 29 too long. That's all I can say.
Yeah, and that I guess concludes our top best and worst movies of 2020. If you have different opinions, you feel free to make your comments. We're happy to read them and comment on them. If you've got a different list, which you probably do, you know, feel free to post your top five and top five best and top five worst movies so that we can kind of see where we're at. Again, 2020 wasn't the perfect year. A lot of the better movies were probably postponed into 2021, hoping that the theaters will open soon so we can get back to seeing other stuff. But until that happens, there's still a ton of product being pushed to streaming services. So we'll definitely talk about some more of those movies as the year goes on, including all of the Warner Brothers movies that are going to HBO Max along with into theaters. And I know Disney Plus will have a lot of movies end up on their platform as well, including all their new shows, which we'll probably spend a lot of time talking about as well. Mm-hmm. All the Marvel stuff, all the Star Wars stuff, including and up to The Mandalorian. You know, the WandaVision is going to be starting in a couple of weeks, so that'll be interesting to see where that goes. But yeah, we're here every week talking and seeing what our thoughts are on the most up-to-date entertainment stuff out there. Thank you again for listening to our best and worst of 2020. Tom, tell people where they can find you on the web.
Well, at least on the web, you can find me at one of two websites for right now, avatarwebsitedesign.com or avatarws.com. And I'm a web developer, and Brian and I have collaborated on a number of projects, and we use each other just for any projects that I don't feel like doing or he doesn't feel like doing. And we work fairly well together. We've had a couple of rave reviews on some of the websites we've done together, and hopefully we can continue collaborating.
Yes, sir. And you can visit my websites at briankaren.com and phoenixmoiray.com. You can follow me on Facebook, Brian Karen Author, and on Twitter at Brian Karen Books. And you can also check out my Phoenix Moiray YouTube page. And please, if you want to see my full reviews as well as my full thoughts on my top 10 movies of the year, you can visit my blog at chaosbreedschaos.com. So come back next week when me and Tom, or Tom and I, take a deep dive into the new season of Cobra Kai. Wax on, wax off, and don't forget to breathe. See you guys next week. Thanks.